Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Kavanagh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Oh, this is such a great quote about the roles of women and social expectations for and of women at the time. She says this in her mind. Scarlett says, nothing she taught me is of any help to me. What good will kindness do me now? What value is gentleness? Better that I had learned to plow or chop cotton like a darkie. Oh, mother, you were wrong. She did not stop to think that Ellen's ordered world was gone and a brutal world had taken its place. So this is her, again, coming to terms with a change of her world. You know, kind of, you know, our world is changing too. Who knows what we're going to end up thinking would have been useful. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there right now who have completely reevaluated jobs that are now deemed essential, which, you know, a month and a half ago, people would have were looking down on those job holders, you know, that essential employees don't even make a living wage, you know. So that passage kind of made me think of that in a way.
Yeah, I like that passage. I think that some of the same sentiments were in that second one we did where she's talking about the yams.
Yeah.
As she's doing the yams.
Exactly. All of these would be good in workshops. Helping support each other, quotes, yeah.
Right. And for something that's going to be in the public eye, I think in a workshop discussion, we could explain terms like we are only using a term darkie historically as part of historic text, something that we put on our website without that context.
Yeah.
I'm a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, I agree. I think this quote is better in workshop context. I agree with you on that. I listen, there's anytime the language in this book is inflammatory, racist against African Americans. But I always come back to that Margaret Mitchell was writing about a certain historical time period when those words were used, you know. Mm-hmm. Thank God I wasn't alive in Reconstruction or the Civil War, but we have enough historical records to know she didn't make that language up, you know.
Right.
Margaret Mitchell did not make that language up. She was writing a fictional story set in a historical time period. And, you know, part of me says we got to stand up for that. And part of me says, I don't like it, you know.
Right.
So,
well, I think it's the difference between somebody seeing it without context and us being there to contextualize it.
Yeah, I agree.
And to say, hey, we fully recognize from a modern perspective this isn't something we do anymore.
No, and God, don't want to, you know, and you know, I wouldn't, tried really hard not to, you know, as much as, like I said, I could probably recite the whole book, I wouldn't do some of those scenes out loud, you know, just, you know, you know. Okay, so moving on. Now, this is one of my most favorite moments, when Scarlett realizes that Melanie is not the weakling that she had previously thought. And again, this is after they've made it back to Terra. The war is not quite yet over, as far as I remember my memory. But I think it's a very interesting moment, and it also speaks to me as how maybe in our current situation in real life, we're seeing different sides of people, good and bad, the people we know, or people that we may not know them, but they're in the news, and we're, you know, people's true colors are, you know, good or bad. You know, we're seeing people we might have disrespected in the past have done something wonderful, you know, in this situation, or people that we respected in the past we now see in a different light because they've done some really awful, selfish, whatever thing. So this kind of colored my admiration for this quote. With a thrill, she looked up at the frail, swaying girl for whom she had never had any feelings but of dislike and contempt. Now, struggling against hatred for Ashley's wife, there surged a feeling of admiration and comradeship. She saw in a flash of clarity, untouched by any petty emotion, that beneath the gentle voice and the dove-like eyes of Melanie, There was a thin, flashing blade of unbreakable steel. Felt, too, that there were banners and bugles of courage in Melanie's quiet blood. This is really a turning point in the story, because it's in this moment Scarlett has this realization fully. Now, the story continues, and she still manipulates Melanie. She's still, you know, she has that respect for her, but she's also still willing to use her and manipulate her to get what she wants. So, but it's the beginning of her awareness that she truly loves this woman, this best friend that she has, this, in a weird way, her sister-in-law, because Scarlett her first marriage is to Melanie's little brother, or older brother. I can't remember which one's older. I think the brother is younger than Melanie. So they are sisters forever in Melanie's mind, and in Scarlett's mind, this is starting to be true. This is her female soulmate, and she's starting to get that and recognize that she is strong and she's not, you know, this vacuous weakling that she thought she was. I think it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I really like the themes in this one. Are you familiar with the not like other girls meme?
I think so.
Basically, it challenges this idea that I'm not like other girls. They're blonde bimbos and they're shallow. They're not like me, who's quirky and reads books. And this is sort of like a period version of them.
It is.
I'm not like other girls. Yeah. And so I think it just addressing even the modern notion,
yeah,
that pits women against women because it's a different form of femininity.
Well, and for the up until this moment, in every challenging situation that Scarlett's in, where she's trying to save her family, and again, her folks, her family encompasses a lot of people, not just blood relatives, she has no other person to depend on. There, you know, there's no other person doing the heavy lifting. It's all her. And in this moment, she realizes Melanie is also there doing heavy lifting in her own way. And that sense of what you said, I'm different from other girls. Scarlett was always, she knew she wasn't like them, you know, but she was the strong one, they were the weak ones, whatever. This is that moment where she realizes she's not alone. And, you know, through the rest of the book, you kind of wish she'd grow with that a little more, but she's just, you know, Margaret Mitchell wrote a really interesting character, you know, so, but, anyway, I really like this quote, and I think there's a lot we could do with that one. The next quote is Rhett thinking about Scarlett, and it alludes to a scene that I think everybody is familiar with. He had never known such gallantry as the gallantry of Scarlett O'Hara going forth to conquer the world in her mother's velvet curtains and the tail feathers of a rooster. You know, that's when I think that's a really good quote. I don't know if it does much for delving deep into things. I mean, I think it could, what people are willing to do, you know, in bad times and everything. And she's putting on a front, you know, to try to, you know, get what she needs. But he thinks it's gallant. And I love that about him, that he sees the gallantry in what she's trying to do for her folks, you know, her people. She's trying to get money to, you know, save their life, their home, their livelihoods and everything, and she's willing to dress up and play a part of, you know, the famous the horse jail scene, you know, try to get money out of Rhett. So anyway,
if we use this quote, can we show the clip of Carol Burnett?
No, because I hate that quote.
Oh man,
I know everybody loves that, but God, that was just I love this book so much that offended me. It was like making fun of it, and I realize that's just me, but of course we would probably have to use that because everybody's familiar with that. But it kind of makes a joke of the gallantry, you know. It makes the joke of, again, the movie, and you know, the visuals of that Carol Burnett scene, and even in the movie, there's so much more in the actual text about her tearing down those curtains and creating that dress and going to Atlanta to see Rhett in the Yankee horse jail to try to get his money. There's so much more than just what is in pop culture, you know. So anyway, but here's a good one that just made me laugh. I LOL'd on the side of this one. A startling thought, this, that a woman could handle business matters as well or better than a man. A revolutionary thought to Scarlett, who had been reared in the tradition that men were omniscient and women none too bright. That just makes me laugh. A startling thought, you know. That's funny. Okay, so skip down a couple of these quotes, aren't really that. Oh, then this one, this, well, I think one of the other issues with Gone with the Wind that a lot of people have is I'm going to use the word alleged or so-called rape scene. When he carries her up the steps, Rhett carries Scarlett up the steps, he's drunk, she's pretty much drunk too, but he carries her up the steps and they has his way with her in the night. And this is Margaret Mitchell's description of that. She was darkness and he was darkness, and there had never been anything before this time, only darkness and his lips upon her. She tried to speak and his mouth was over hers again. Suddenly she had a wild thrill such as she had never known. Joy, fear, madness, excitement surrendered to arms that were too strong, lips too bruising, fate that moved too fast. That doesn't sound like rape to me. That sounds like, you know, she's being sexually fulfilled for the first time in her life. So I feel like that's a very feminist empowering passage that Margaret Mitchell wrote. When was this book published? You know, I mean, this is unprecedented. I mean, that would have been porn in 1930 whatever, you know. And yet it's beautifully written. And it again, it's one of those things I point to in the book that is so much more than what you get as the visual in the movie, you know. And so I love it for that. I love that scene because I think it's so important, because it counters that commonly held belief that there's a rape scene in Gone with the Wind between Scarlett and Rhett. They're married, and this is not rape. I mean, she, you know, the earlier scene when they're downstairs before he carries her upstairs, she doesn't want him to touch her. He's going to smash her head between his hands like a walnut. I mean, it's horrible. It's an awful, violent, drunken scene. But what actually happens is not rape. And so, at least, you know, in the book. So that I put that in there because I thought it was very controversial, and also a great counter to the kind of perception in pop culture for what happens in that part of the book.
Yeah, I think this would be a good discussion point. I think if I were not familiar with Gone with the Wind and I just saw this quote, it'd be like, okay, so this is a romance sex scene.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd strike me without the content.
Yeah, I think it would be in the content, and I think it would really work in a workshop if we were talking about, you know, the difference between the relationship between Scarlett and Ashley and Scarlett and Rhett, and how she sees these two men and how they see her, which we could get to from a lot of the earlier quotes that we've already talked about. Mm-hmm. So I wanted it in there so I wouldn't forget the actual text from the book, but I don't think it's great as a standalone for this project. Mm-hmm. Conversely, the very next quote is how she thinks of Ashley. And she's reflecting. This is later in her life. She's looking back on how she's remembering how she fell in love with him. And she fell in love with Ashley when she was like 15 years old or something. She had wanted him in that first instance, wanted him as simply and unreasoningly as she wanted food to eat, horses to ride, and a soft bed on which to lay herself. She just saw him as another comfort, you know, something that made her feel good. And without understanding, without reasoning it out, without anything. And once she did that, it was like stuck in her forever. So I thought that was a kind of, that's not a standalone passage really, I don't think, for our purposes, but I think in workshop it would be interesting to say it.
Yeah.
As is the next one, Scarlett to Ashley, "Why don't you say it, you coward? You're afraid to marry me." I mean, that's, you know, that in a nutshell is, you know, kind of like the epitome of an Ashley-Scarlett relationship moment. You know, it's like, he's a coward, he's afraid, she's tough and strong and sexual and all the things that he just can't deal with, you know. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.